Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Caught! Touchdown! Kansas City!
Hey, Chiefs Kingdom, we have you covered. Joining Sports Daily Live, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel.
Welcome in, everybody. Welcome back in for hour number two. We're going to talk a little Shockers. We'll talk KU football and all the changes happening and some not changes there as well. And Lawrence coming up later in the hour. Right now, though, our Chiefs insider, Dan Israel, joins the program. Dan, welcome in. And here we go again. Just same old for the Chiefs here.
It's literally starting to feel like Groundhog Day. You know, this is crazy.
It is crazy. And what's crazy about it, and what's we'll never see it again, I don't think.
Yeah.
What's crazy about it, though, is why won't Andy Reid run the ball, Dan? Like, can you go down to the office and just knock on the door and say, Andy, you know, you kind of started the game with it, 5 carries in the opening drive. You ended the game with it, helped Jai's clock. Why can't we do that in the middle of the game?
Yeah, it frustrates me, especially in the red zone. You know, just pound the ball, especially when we're good at it, you know, do it. But I know it's not glamorous. I don't think he has this desire to show off. I think it's just literally he thinks that, you know, the balance is different than what it really is. I always want to ask him, and I'm just too chicken to do it. You know, when you look at the stats and you 70 snaps and you see you only ran it 14 times, does that shock you? Do you go, really? I thought we ran it more than that. I don't know. Someday I'll ask him.
You know, on that note, Dan, I mean, Patrick Mahomes, again, under siege a lot in the game on Sunday night. And it just seems like with everything that we know about this team and the personnel that they have, the struggles they've had on the outside of the offensive line, how good they've been historically with the interior of the offensive line, and then just having Isaiah Pacheco back healthy with Kareem Hunt and then the change of pace guys in Carson Steele and Samaje Perine, that it just should be a given that they run the ball. I know that, again, like Jacob mentioned, they started the game with it, they ended the game with it. So when it really was the most important, they did run the football. There's just something about a lapse in the middle of the game where it just kind of goes away.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes I look down and they line up in the shotgun and it's like, why are we in the shotgun?
Yeah.
Why are we in the shotgun for this? We're always in the shotgun. Now, look, that could be strategy and the way the schema of what Coach Reid develops. You know, he doesn't want to, he wants to disguise it with the shotgun. But I always think, you know, the first thing we do is, and when we run the ball, sometimes we run it, we're going back in the shotgun. So the ball goes 7 yards. The running back has to get 7 yards just to get back to the line of scrimmage. But I don't know. I can't quite answer all of that, but I do think the offensive line has been very good at rushing, blocking for the rushing plays. And I think that, you know, the addition of TJ Humphries was significant on Sunday. I don't want to say that he had an A-plus grade, but his mechanics were so much more sound. And he won a lot of battles. He lost a few as well, but the guy hasn't played since New Year's Eve of last year. And so I feel like, you know, we kind of threw him into the fire, and he did an okay job. Unfortunately, now battling a hamstring, we'll see what happens with that. But I do think brighter days, if we can get him back on the field and get him back up to football shape, I do think we're going to see, you know, some better line play, which is just imperative. It was becoming so that problem was becoming so glaring, I don't see how they could ignore it.
Well, and so what is the latest on the injury? Because it's, you know, I'm getting like mixed signals here. The word is feels pretty good, but we'll know after an MRI. I would think you wouldn't need an MRI if it feels good.
Yeah, Jacob, that's exactly what I thought too. It's like, you know, hamstrings, they don't do MRIs for hamstrings routinely that I'm aware of. So something makes me think they might be a little bit more concerned. Maybe they're just being precautious because of, you know, his previous injury. In fact, I don't even know if it's the hamstring on the leg that on the side that he had the knee injury, but it kind of rung strange to me. It's like an MRI for a hamstring. It just seemed a little odd to me. So, and that's my understanding of the injury is we're just waiting on that the results of that.
I felt like, Dan, defensively for Kansas City, things looked better. Not perfect, but better against the Chargers than what we had seen in recent weeks. You know, it wasn't necessarily even about the pass rush quite as much. I mean, I know that they were able to, you know, get some pressure on Justin Herbert in that game, but I felt like the secondary stepped up a little bit. It really wasn't, and I know that the Chargers were lacking Ladd McConkey in the game, but I did feel like maybe things are starting to turn a corner, and hopefully this defense can get back to an overall unit that we saw at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, Tommy, I thought so too. I was kind of encouraged. I thought Joshua Williams was playing better, and then bam, you know, yeah. I just don't know how we keep this kid on the field. And, you know, not knocking Najee Johnson. I mean, he's playing his heart out, but, you know, I felt like Williams was doing a little bit better. And I think that, you know, the Chiefs' level of concern can be referenced by the fact that they're signing Steven Nelson back to the team, you know. And look, I will say this, you got to be impressed that Brett Veach is just, I mean, he's aware of not only players on other teams, players in other practice squads, but guys that are literally on the couch. This is a guy we literally signed off the front room couch. So now Steven Nelson, I don't want to say that that's indicates how he's going to play, right? But Veach's awareness that this guy is available, that guy is available, that's impressive to me. Whether or not Nelson's, you know, still in shape, ready to play, I don't know. We're just going to have to see. But I think the fact that they went out and got him kind of indicates the way they feel about their cornerback situation.
It's a problem. Is it correctable? And you know, you still, what do they have, 3 sacks, 2.5 sacks? Still doesn't feel like they're getting enough pressure. It's been better, though, I think, to be fair. Is there another level for the pass rush?
Yeah, I think so.
I do too, but I don't want to be unrealistic, but it does feel like they can get better there.
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the things that improved on Sunday was the play of the safeties. I think the safeties were helping the coverage situation. And when you do that, you get those two guys, even if one of them stays back and helps the secondary, cornerbacks have a little more freedom to do what they need to do. And overall, the secondary just works better. So I think so. But I think there is another gear there. There is a shutdown gear that we've seen at times. We've seen flashes of it. Now they just need to execute it. It seems like they have a quarter in each game where they just kind of fall apart, right? I mean, this last week was the third quarter, and it seems to me like that old shutdown in the second half kind of defense is still out there. We just have to kind of execute better to get there.
Going back to the play calling and the offense, Dan, it was definitely apparent to me that when all the times that Patrick Mahomes was dropping back and throwing the football, there were multiple play calls where he was getting the ball out of his hand super fast. And quick, you know, part of that is out of necessity for sure. Otherwise, he's going to get killed back in the backfield. But he, you know, even that touchdown pass to DeAndre Hopkins, he barely held on to the ball for a second before he got it to Hopkins. That's, I would imagine that even if the play calling doesn't change and they don't run the ball more, we're going to have to see quite a bit more of that from Patrick Mahomes in the pass game, not being able and not having the luxury of letting things develop downfield quite as much, because he's got to get the ball out of his hands quickly or else he's going to get killed.
Yeah, Tommy, I agree. I like it. I think we need to be doing more of it. You know, I really feel like there's nothing wrong with taking 8 or 12 yards and moving the ball that way. I think sometimes we get so, boy, want, you know, let's make sure before I get rid of this ball that I don't have a big play. Yeah. And I just feel like, you know, the more they do that, especially when you know you've got, look, Kelsey goes in. Kelsey and Mahomes are so good at reading defenses. Kelsey knows where there's going to be absence. Look at that last play for the first down. He just went and sat down in this open space. He didn't even move. He wasn't evading a defender. He knew exactly where the seams were. He went and sat in the middle of two seams, and Mahomes just had to find him, and he did. And so I love that play. But, you know, rolling out that, you know, moving the pocket, all of that to me is great. But just line up, quick snap the ball and throw it. They did that a couple of times, and I just like, look, it's 8 yards. Take 8 yards all day long. I love that, those kinds of plays. And I also think that loosens everybody up, right? It keeps them from stacking the box. It keeps them from dropping back into coverage. They don't have time for that. If they try to stack the box and drop back into coverage, the ball will be gone by then. So I love it. I'd love to see more of it.
Or just run the ball.
hard to argue with that, Jacob.
Anywho, the Browns are interesting. So that's next here. And I know everybody wants to laugh, but Jameis is slinging it.
Yeah.
Which I think is dangerous for the Chiefs defensively. Yeah. And they got Myles Garrett, which is obviously a massive, massive, massive concern for Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs are only 5.44. It's down to 4. Everybody's betting the Browns, apparently.
Really?
Yeah. But I get it. Like, I know it's the Browns and they won a ton of games, but stylistically, this is kind of a bad matchup for the Chiefs.
Yeah, I would have much rather matched up against them in September. They weren't playing good ball in September.
And they didn't have Jameis, right? Who's just going to throw it everywhere.
Yeah, Jameis is actually, and look, you know, he has a history of throwing pick sixes, no doubt. The problem is he can get a lot done too. So, you know, it becomes kind of that cost of doing business. Okay, he's going to throw a pick six, but he's going to also, you know, throw two touchdowns and they're going to rush for two. So I do think Jameis Winston has improved this squad immeasurably. I mean, they're maybe not playoff caliber, but they can beat you on a Sunday for sure. I mean, they've kept it close in several of these last few weeks. And you mentioned Myles Garrett, you know, I mean, that's just, it feels like we're playing this parade of defensive ends with Max Crosby and Bosa and Myles Garrett. And to think that DJ Humphries might not be back out on the field, it's like, what are we going to do? How are we going to stop this guy? And back to Tommy's point, well, both your points, rush and throw the ball quick. Don't give them time to do anything. You know, that seems to be the best defense against what we've got on an offensive line.
We've gone all this time, Dan, haven't even mentioned Matthew Wright and the game-winning field goal. Three different kickers this season have won kicked game-winning field goals for the Chiefs. it's just, it's wild. And the fact that he was able to get that field goal in after doinking it off off the rail, like it is incredible.
Yeah, I'm calling that the Doinkalarooski in honor of Coach Reed's State Farm ads. Look, that thing hit the goalpost, and I think everybody's heart completely stopped. It was just, you know, it's hard to tell whether it bounces in or out if you're watching it on TV. And it's like, oh, my goodness, if that could have been, it couldn't have been any closer. He hits the upright a little more solid. That ball bounces out instead of in. And it's fascinating to me, this special team situation. And Wright, look, you know, that was a lot of pressure, man. You're talking about games on the line and him coming off the, you know, this kid's been through a lot this season already. And I love seeing him stand next to Mahomes and Chris Jones and stuff. He looks like a child almost. He's so small. But hey, as long as you can kick the football, that's all that matters. I also thought it was interesting. Did you guys, I found it fascinating that Justin Reed was doing the kickoffs.
Yep.
You know,
I like it because it gives you, I said that from the beginning, it gives you an extra tackler out there.
Yeah, that's true.
Go a couple doors down, tell Taylor Swift her magnet that, you know, guided that football in, because we all know the fix is in. She did a nice job there to make that ball doink in instead of out. It's another conversation for another day. I hate not trying to score at the end of a game.
Yeah.
Just, you know, whatever. But hey, it's working. They're 12-1, Dan. It's that early noon call. You guys are getting some of these this year. You got the noon window here. It's on the road, though, which is challenging, I know. But what do you guys have in store for us?
Yeah, you know, the noon window doesn't give us much freedom, so it'll be just our pretty much our straight pregame show. I always think with the noon window, though, it's weird now. I have to set an alarm. It's like, you know, I have to get up early and what's this? But it's kind of fun to do for a change, because the nice thing is I'll be home in my own bed by 9 o'clock that night, you know, playing an early game. It's kind of nice. So if you're on the road playing an early game, it's the way to do it.
Dan, we appreciate it. Good luck. Maybe they'll run the ball against the Browns. Who knows? Doubt it, but maybe.
Yeah, don't count on it.
A boy can dream, right?
Yeah. When you're 12-1, like, what are you going to say? Yeah. Like, hey, we're 12-1. You know?
That's right.
Dan, we appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet, guys. Have a good Tuesday.
You can follow Dan on social media. You can hear Dan every time the Chiefs play over on 98.7 KNSS, home of the Chiefs here in Wichita. I'm intrigued by this game. I got to do something. This is a... It's both a good test for them because of the style, but that's a bad matchup, I think, for Kansas City. It'll challenge them to be better in the ways that we know they're going to have to be. We'll say that. All right, two other things that we really want to get to in this hour. KU football is going through a lot of changes right now, and then some consistency. There's been a whirlwind. We'll get you caught up. I know Tommy's had his finger to the pulse of all of that. We'll also talk Shockers. We didn't get a chance to get to that yesterday. We've got Paul Mills coming in tomorrow to chat, but we'll look back at the East Tennessee State game and sort of where things stand right now for Wichita State. Those two topics still to come here on Sports Daily. Thank you to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH. Also, later in the show, your chance to win tickets to Illuminations at Botanica. It's all Brockton Caster. Don't go away. To go to Illuminations at Botanica, you can win a 4-pack right now, courtesy of Sports Daily, KFH, and Odyssey Wichita. Simply text the keyword SHINE to the short code 20357. One entry per person per day. Winners will be drawn on Friday. Again, text 20357, and the keyword is SHINE. Good luck, everybody. Tommy, let's start with KU. All right, so there's been a lot of things happening. We'll have Shreyas Lada, our KU insider, in tomorrow. The biggest headline news is Jalen Daniels is coming back. The other massive piece of news is that we're going to get changes at both coordinators. And then like there's a lot of movement right now for this KU football program. And it's interesting because Jalen Daniels, like, do they need to turn the page? It's going to be a rebuilding year. Or do you bring him back? And he's obviously good. Like, I'm surprised he came back. But B, like, what direction do you think they take next year?
Well, I mean, I think that a huge part of it for Jalen Daniels, not only NIL, but also he's got to be aligned with Lance Leipold on the direction of the offense. And that's why I think a large reason Jalen Daniels decided to come back, Jeff Grimes is gone. He's not the offensive coordinator anymore. He goes off to Wisconsin. It was a one-year tenure for Jeff Grimes and Lawrence. A lot of criticism on Grimes. It got better as the season went on, but you know, still they underachieved offensively as a whole throughout the entire season. So now you've got Jim Zabrowski, who has a ton of experience with Jalen Daniels. He's been the quarterback's coach for a long time. He runs the offense now. Just announced this morning, Matt Lubick, who was with the Jayhawks for a number of years, most recently Nevada's offensive coordinator, it was announced today that he's coming back as co-offensive coordinator with Jim Zabrowski. He's got a lot of familiarity, again, with the Jayhawks program. So I think those two things are aligned, and I think a lot of it has to do with why Jalen Daniels decided to come back for one more year. It's that continuity at the coordinator and guys that he's really familiar with.
Yeah, I think it's the right play. I guess my question becomes, is Jalen Daniels a centerpiece that will allow them to go attack the portal as aggressively as they'll almost certainly have to be competitive next year?
Like, I think they're so. Going to,
it, while they have Jalen Daniels back, which is great because he's a good quarterback, and he fixed his issues from early in the year, thankfully, they need a lot, right? They need a running back now. They need probably, what, at least two reliable pass catchers, a lot of offensive linemen.
Tight end help, Jared Casey linemen. Is gone. Yeah, like they're basically going to have to rebuild a lot of the skill position. You know, and that's a big part of it, too. I think that, you know, knowing that he feels comfortable with Jim Zabrowski, and Matt Lubick has been with the program before. I think, because remember, when Jalen Daniels had his ascension nationally before he got injured, Andy right. Kotelnicki was running the offense. Both Jim Zabrowski and Matt Lubick worked very closely with Andy Kotelnicki. And so this is a return to sort of that system that allowed Jalen Daniels to be the best version of himself. He wasn't the best version of himself under Jeff Grimes. There were other factors too. It wasn't just Jeff Grimes' fault, but it was by and large, he was the offensive coordinator and the play caller and all of that. And he didn't put Jalen Daniels in great positions to be successful early in the season. It did get better. They did adjust, but this is a return to the system that allowed Jalen Daniels to again be the best version of himself.
And he'll have to basically work with an entire new group of skill guys, which is going to be challenging, I think, next year for whatever. Now, it can be done. Of course it can be done. We see it happen all the time. TCU played in a playoff. We've got Arizona State on top of the Big 12 when they were supposed to be on bottom. Like, these kinds of turnarounds happen literally every year in college football, Indiana. But it helps to have Jalen Daniels at the centerpiece of needing to do that.
It does.
And so that's great news. That's great news for the Jayhawks.
They also make a change at defensive coordinator, too. Brian Borland announced his retirement. Right. So they promoted DK McDonald, who had been on staff the previous year on the defense. He's the new defensive coordinator. I would have liked for the Jayhawks to maybe look externally to find another defensive coordinator, but I think that a change was needed at both coordinator positions.
Sure,
and
it was.
You know, so ultimately I'm okay with the direction that they went, because Leipold had to shake things up.
He did. And I just, like, I don't have any idea how to, and I won't after the portal either, probably, because I think the portal is very confusing, how to, like, set expectations for KU next year. And honestly, that might be the best thing that ever happened to the Jayhawks. I just hope that the fans embrace this chapter as much as they have going into that new stadium, and we'll see. You know, that part of it's curious. Whereas K-State, who we also pay very close attention to, will come in and likely be, if not picked to win the Big 12, one of the top two or three teams to win the Big 12 next year. Theirs is simpler.
There are going to be high expectations, I think, for Kansas State next season for sure.
Yeah. And I just don't know how to compare KU's because this year it was very easy. They're both expected to win the Big 12, right? It was an easy set of expectations.
Lance Leipold at KU has had more success when there have been very little or no expectations on him.
Which isn't a good thing.
Yeah.
It's not a good thing, but that sticks in my head. That's what I'm saying. Like, is it going to be good enough if the expectation is to, let's say, finish 7th in the Big 12? But they finish 5th and make a bowl game. Is that going to be good
yes.
enough to recapture
yeah.
what the program had going into this season? I think that becomes the question that I'll be paying
yeah,
attention
to. Yeah, I think so. And here's the reason why. I've said this on this show before. I've said it for years. Kansas football fans are not asking for much. They're asking to have a winning record and be a bowl-eligible team. And maybe every once in a while be in contention for a 12-team playoff spot, be in the top 25 from time to time. Like, that's what, like, this is not a program where the fan base, I think, by and large, is like going in expecting like we are going to be competing for national championships, Big 12 championships, all of that year in, year out. That's never been this program in the entire history of the program. So really, like, the underperforming this year when they were 1-5 and then when they were 2-6, that was unacceptable because it was going to take a huge rally for them to even be bowl eligible, which is the baseline of what Kansas fans, I think, are asking for. And so as long as they get back to that point, everything else is gravy as far as I'm concerned.
That might be all you're asking for, but is that going to sell out the stadium? Because ultimately, more than ever before, more than any time in the history of the program, based on the landscape of college athletics and the way it's changing, you'd better be able to sell out your football stadium or you're not going to keep up, because the financials are changing so much in the sport.
Might be a reason why the new KU stadium is smaller in capacity than
which
some
is okay,
of the other stadiums.
And I don't have a problem with that, but you still got to fill it up.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And this year, if they're playing in that new stadium, they're not filling it up, you know, like, and so like that to me is where I get it. I get that expectations are low and everybody just wants to be able to watch them on a Saturday, but the way this is going, you've got to be able to put butts in the seats. So I don't know. And I don't know this, by the way. I don't know if being in the mix to middle of the pack for a bowl game puts enough butts in the seats. It did when they were so bad for so long. But now that they're past that horrible chapter of the program's history, now that it's not, it's been so bad. And like, if it's consistently 6 or 7 wins, is that enough to get enough people there to sell out a football game?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's the important question.
Kansas may be past that really terrible period, but I think every single person that is affiliated or a fan of that program, they know that it's one bad move away from being right back to where they were before. Because remember, it was a decision to move on from Mark Mangino in 2009. And it was very quickly after that, when Turner Gill came in, that things fell apart and they went to the very bottom of the cellar and they stayed there for over a decade. So, I don't think that people are going to just say, okay, cool, like we're good with 6 or 7 wins always. And like, we never want more than that. Or of course they want more than that. Like, you want them to be competitive and potentially win a conference championship, you know, be in the playoff, all of that. But I'm not sure that it is realistic to think that this is a program that should be in that spot year in and year out. I think the baseline should be just make a bowl game every year, like just be a bowl eligible team each year. And then every couple of years, if you can challenge, you know, to win a conference championship or whatever, that's great.
I hope so, and I'm sure glad Jalen Daniels will be back to help him try to get to a bowl game next year, because without him, it would be dicey. It would be dicey. And all these changes are, I think, whether we don't know if they're positive or not yet, they're necessary. Like, all the changes that are happening are necessary changes based on the year we just had. I definitely think that that is the case. All right, let's take one more break here. We're going to give the Shockers their due notice. We'll get you caught up. Where do they sit in the net? What does the American look like in the net? And how do we use that to set expectations with the conference season looming? We'll get into that as we make our way through it here. Shocker Basketball Talk next. If you ever miss the show, by the way, you can always go back and listen to the show through the Odyssey app in a podcast form. We've told you before, but we say it only to let you know that it's a very popular way to listen to the show. We've had thousands and thousands of people each month download the podcast. It's a great way to be able to take the show with you wherever you are. Speaking of that Odyssey app where you can find it, you can also find at 6 o'clock tonight, Mitch Holthus, the Chiefs Kingdom Show. If you can't listen to it on the air, if you're not in your car, you can listen to it on the Odyssey app. Just search KFH. We'll be right back. Shocker Talk next on Sports Daily.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH, and we are glad to be with you on this Tuesday, Big Tuesday. We've got a big show coming for you as well tomorrow. It's a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday if you want to plan your wardrobe appropriately. We'll have Shreya Slada in, our KU insider, talk about all these changes for KU football we were just talking about. Talk about KU basketball's free fall from number 1 to number 10 in the top 25 after a bad week. And we'll have Paul Mills, Wichita State head men's basketball coach. He'll be on with us tomorrow in our second hour. Tommy, let's talk a little Shocker hoops. Nice win over East Tennessee State. Nice week with a convincing win over Alcorn State, I should say, and East Tennessee State. Now they go to DePaul this weekend on Saturday, which will be another fun one. And I have not checked DePaul. Let me do that real quick. DePaul. Oh, yeah. DePaul's top 70. So that will be a really, really nice game. A road game with a team like that, Tommy, that could end up as a really nice resume game, quite frankly. So the Shockers currently sit at 80 in the net, and they're the third-ranked American team. So you've got Memphis, Tommy, at 46. You've got North Texas at 68, Wichita State at 80. Then you've got Florida Atlantic at 101. And we'll, for all intents and purposes, call them a top 100 team. Then you're going down to like 137 for Rice. East Carolina, South Florida, and Temple are all around 175. UAB's at 215. Do you think we have enough of a sample size here to call what should be a three-horse race in the American? And Wichita State to be one of those horses.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think at this point you kind of have seen what programs are, you know, sort of rising to the top a little bit, at least through non-con, and things can always change once you get into conference play. But Memphis, you know, what they did on the national stage at the Maui Invitational, I think is impressive. You know, it's a team that I think everybody knew they would be good, but I'm not sure that there were a ton of expectations that they would be at least to this level early on in the season. Now, we know what Memphis does, and we know how things have worked historically with them. Once they get into conference play, they lose some games that they probably shouldn't lose and that sort of thing, fall back down to earth somewhat. But at least to start off the year in the non-con, yeah, I think that they have shown that they're going to be a team to be reckoned with. And I've got no problem at all having Wichita State in that conversation too.
I mean, I think they should be, and I think – I mean, look, we're almost to the conference schedule. I think we can get to the point where we start to set some expectations where, you know, at the beginning of the year, we're kind of guessing at that. The net rankings are out. KenPom mostly agrees. Like, the Shockers appear to pretty clearly be one of the top three teams. I don't know that this is going to be a situation where there's an at-large coming out of the American. I don't know that yet, but I think it's also too early to say that they're definitively won't be, right? You look at Wichita State's schedule, just mentioned it, on the road at DePaul, that could end up being a really good game. K-State, probably not going to get the help they need out of that game. And then those are their next two chances.
But still, that's a power four, you know, victory, you know, that they could get. So that is important. I mean, it all
depends on where they end. Is that a quad one game, a quad two game? Like, I don't know what to make of K-State. So I don't really know. But if I look at their AAC schedule, they do go to Memphis. They get North Texas at home. They get Memphis twice. They get them both twice. So that's four games right there, plus two more here where you think, okay, the Shockers might be able to get, you know, some. They haven't set quad games yet in the net, by the way. But that gives you a chance to that'll be enough games probably to try and build that resume up a little bit. Maybe there's an at-large possibility there. I don't know. It depends on how good, I guess, Memphis and North Texas are. Man, I wish the Shockers had Ronnie DeGray. That's all I keep thinking about. Well, I'll ask Paul Mills about that. Like, how does it evolve without him out there? They obviously did a nice job last week in that regard against Alcorn State and against East Tennessee State. But man, knowing that they appear to be this close, you'd sure like them to be healthy. But it's been it's been a nice start. They had 96. They scored 96.
Yeah. And 96. And if you're going through the net rankings, I mean, obviously Florida Atlantic is right outside of the top 100 there at 101, but then there's a pretty severe drop off after that. Rice, you have to go all the way down to close to 140, and then the other teams are lower than that. So I think the most important thing for Wichita State, now that we sort of have at least a better handle on the way the conference, at least from a net perspective and a KenPom perspective, are shaping out through the non-conference, more than anything, you need to take care of the games that you should be taking care of. Like, outside of the teams that you just mentioned in Memphis, North Texas, and then I said Florida Atlantic, outside of those teams, in conference play, you've got to handle your business. And I don't care if you're playing those games inside Coke Arena or you're going on the road. You've got to take care of those games because a lot of those teams as of right now in the conference are way far down in the net and the KenPom. So you should be handling your business in those games because you can't afford in a conference like the American to slip up in a game against a much inferior opponent.
And that brings up, you took the words out of my mouth. How many of those games do they need to be winning? It is unrealistic in college basketball to sit here and say they need to win all the games against the other teams that they put. We know how hard it is to win road games in conference. How many of those losses could they afford, though? If we truly wanted to see them have at-large consideration, let's say they just split with Memphis and North Texas. I think you're looking at a situation. So if you take those two losses, I don't know that they'd be able to have any more than three others for those other teams.
I was going to say, you need to probably have
four or five. So how realistic then is it to say Wichita State could finish with only four or five losses in the conference to maybe get some at-large consideration? I would probably concede that that's not fair. And if that's the case, then we get into this situation of the Shockers are going to have to win the conference tournament to get into the NCAA tournament. And if that's the case, that sort of pulls away a little bit from the urgency of a lot of these games. And I don't like that. You know what I mean? Like at the beginning, like at the baseline, yeah, we want to see them finish near the top of the league. Like, right? But we also want to see him make the NCAA tournament. Is finishing top three in the American a good enough set of progress for year two in Paul Mills? I think so.
They were 5-13 in the conference a season ago. So sure. I mean, like if you finish in the top three, that's a significant improvement.
I agree. But then what does it mean for year three when they're going to lose so many of these players? You know what I mean?
Every team is going to lose a lot of players. You're going to have to rebuild every single year.
That's what I'm saying. Do we reset expectations every year and just say, you know, this roster this year should finish this way. And if it does, that was a good year. And if it doesn't, that was a good, we know that's not going to be reality. They're going to have to do it consistently.
It's all context, right? Like, I don't think that, you know, you finish this season, like let's say they finish third in the American. I'm just spitballing here. Third in the American, and then they don't make the NCAA tournament. Let's just say that hypothetically. I don't think as soon as the season ends, you can say, okay, well, now they need to do X next season. I think you have to wait and see the way the roster pans out before you can set those expectations.
Don't you know, I guess that's my point. Isn't like if you finish third this year, then the next year you need to be competing for the league title. I think for Wichita State it is, because I think finishing third needs to be a catalyst to bringing in a really good roster, whether it's returners or not, the next year. And I don't think we're being unfair with it. I think it's the reality of college basketball right now. I can tell you right now that if K-State falls flat and is in the bottom half of the league and is not sniffing the NCAA tournament, the Jerome Tang love will cool significantly among the fans, among the donors, among everybody else. Like if they don't, so, and I'm going to say this too, and I believe it with every fiber of my soul that Wichita State should be at about the same level as K-State.
Well, let's talk hypotheticals then. I mean,
in a program stacking,
there are four remaining non-conference games for the Shockers. I think you could probably chalk up the Kansas City game and the Friends game as wins, you would think. And then, DePaul and K-State, I think if you get, you obviously want to win both of them, but I think baseline, as long as you're getting one of the two. Okay, so then you end non-conference play with two losses. Okay, you enter into conference play with what? That's a record of 11-2 going into conference play at that point. If they split the series with Memphis and they split the series with North Texas, then you're talking about four losses. I think they can maybe afford two more, maybe three more to be a six or seven loss team going into the conference tournament. And then if they lose one more and they don't win the conference, you know, then you're looking at a seven or eight loss team going into Selection Sunday. And depending on the strength of schedule, that's going to come into play whether or not they're an at-large team. So, I mean, a lot of things have to happen to get to that point, but that would be the path that I would look at where they could at least be in consideration, at least a conversation about an NCAA at-large bid. But if any one of those things gets off track, then you're talking about, yeah, they've got to go in and they've got to win the conference tournament.
And it may be that way anyway. I am, though, if I'm looking at the net and I'm seeing them at 80, they've got the room to get up higher than that. I don't think that's, if you told me before the year started that the Shockers would have a chance to be within the top 70 of the net by the time conference play starts, I'd have said, sign me up for that, right? Because then you don't have to make up that much ground. You got to handle your business in conference play. But if they can get that up into the top 70 of the net by the time this stretch is done, and obviously the Friends game and the Kansas City game aren't going to help them in the net, but the other two might, I think they're cooking a little bit. I think that's real. I love it. I love it. I'm glad that we're here, and I really wish Ronnie DeGray was playing. We'll have Paul Mills tomorrow again on the show. We'll get the latest on you know what it looks like without Beverly for a while. It was interesting. We saw Quincy Ballard play 25 minutes in the game, and we continue to see that rotation of you know, Corey Washington, who's a guard but has some size, kind of go that, you know, four guard around one thing, and it's going to work in some games, and then there's going to be games where they play good bigs where it's going to be a real challenge for them. And I don't know anything about DePaul's roster, so I can't really help you there, but it's a, you know, if we're talking about that K-State game, you can go 4-1 against K-State right now. Don't you think?
I think so. I think you can do that.
So it's, you know, there are going to be games where that's not going to be advantageous. Like I think back to the Northern Iowa game, that would have been a tough game to do that in. That's why I think that game, why Northern Iowa was able to stick around is because they utilized their size. And they, you know, Wichita State handled their business just fine in that game. But we'll get them back in action at DePaul on Saturday. Of course, you'll hear that over on KYN, home of the Shockers, right here in our Odyssey family of networks. We're going to come back. We'll tell you what's on the network today. When we return, don't go away. It's Sports Daily on a Tuesday.